So we are holding on Chaf Dalet Amud Aleph, 9 lines from the top, by the two dots. Okay, so we learned yesterday, we've been talking about the concept of a karpif shaloi hukaf ladira. A karpif is an enclosed area. We said, strictly speaking, a karpif is an area that a person uses to store wood or whatever. But more generally, we use it to mean an... you mind muting yourself? Thanks. So a karpif specifically is an area that's used to store wood, but more generally, a karpif is used to refer to any area that's enclosed, but it's not a mokum, it's not hukaf ladira, it wasn't enclosed. Well, a karpif can be hukaf ladira or can be not. It can be an area that was enclosed for the purpose of using it as living space, meaning that you're going to be going in and out of it regularly, or it could be not. So we said that if it was not a hukaf ladira, then the maximum you can carry in is if it's up to base asayim, 5,000 square amas, as we made the calculation yesterday. So now we started talking about what happens if part of that area was planted with plants or with trees. So we said that if an area within this enclosure was planted with plants, then that part that has plants in it is no longer considered a makam dira, because people don't usually live among the plants. Now, we don't mean, bepashtus, we're not talking about, for example, let's say a lawn that has grass in it. The fact is, usually people have a lawn, they walk all over it. So that wouldn't take it away from being a makam dira. We're talking about you have plants over there of the kind that you wouldn't walk on. So therefore, so that area cannot be considered a base dira anymore. So what we said is, it depends whether that area, it depends on a couple of factors. Is that area that was planted roiv of the enclosure? Then we would say that even the miut of the enclosure follows that. So if, let's say, it was an area of 3 sa, and you planted more than 2 sa, then the whole thing is going to be osur to carry in. But if less than half of it was planted, so we actually had two different versions in the Gemara, Rav Huna Bredi Rav Yeshua and Rabbi Yirmiyahu Medifti. The second one, Rabbi Yirmiyahu Medifti, was Lakula, that if it's less than half of the enclosure and it's up to base sasayim, then you'd still be allowed to carry in the enclosed area over there. So you actually have a machlokas rishonim. In that case, would that be you'd be allowed to carry in only in the rest of the area which is not planted, but maybe not in the planted area itself, because after all, that is in and of itself a karpif based sasayim. Or would we say that you could carry between both of them as well? Rashi mentions the second way. Even if the miut is based sasayim, then they don't asu each other. Therefore, he says that had there been a mechitza between them, then you would have been able to carry from one to the other, because Reb Shimon says that you are allowed to carry from a chotzer to a karpif. So even now that they're completely open, one to another, then it's not nifretz l'rishus ha'osula, it's not open up into a place which would make it osur, and therefore you're allowed to carry in the non-planted area. Now, we said, on the other hand, if you planted trees over there, then b'chlal, that doesn't take away its status as a place that's hukaf ladira, because it's common enough to have trees planted in an area in order to sit in their shade. So now we're going to talk about that. If you planted trees in most of the area, then it's like a chotzer, and therefore it's mutter. And by the way, this whole matter of planting plants or trees or whatever is relevant as far as the question when you make a city. If those who make city eruvin. Good morning, Ali. Those who make city eruvin. You often have in cities there are public parks. So the question becomes then, can those parks be part of the Eruv? Do you have a problem of Nifretz L'makam HaAsulai? Very often, of course, those parks are bigger than Beis Sasayim. So you have to figure. I mean, again, ones that are planted with trees are not necessarily a problem, as we're going to say in the Gemara now. Ones that are planted with grass may or may not be a problem. L'chora, not, because as I said, you know, like you think of, for example, Prospect Park or whatever, people walk all over the grass over there. It's not like it's a planted area that people don't walk on. I'm not sure about that, though. I haven't found anything explicit about that one way or the other of whether a lawn of grass counts for this purpose, that it's considered Nizra, and that's considered an area that's Nizra, and where if it's based on sign would be a problem. I'm not quite sure about that. Anyway. So getting back to the trees, Nata Rubai, were 9 lines from the top of Chavdal Raman Aleph, Nata Rubai Hareu Kachotzer Umutter. We said if he planted most of the area with trees, then it becomes like a chotzer, therefore it's mutter. So Omer of Yehuda, Omer Avimi, Wahusha Asuin, it's Tavlois. So Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Avimi, that works only if the trees are planted in Itztavlois. Itztavlois means rose. Literally, the word Itztavlois, actually, it comes from a word in Greek, which is related to the English word stables. So just like in a stable, you have a bunch of horses or a bunch of whichever kind of animal you have in that stable that are arranged in rows over there. So Itztavlois would mean over here that the trees are arranged in rows. So he says, only if they're arranged in rows like that, not just planted randomly all over, then it's a nice place to sit. But Rav Nachman says, even if they're not in rows, just the fact that you have trees there means that it's still a mokum dira, it's still a place that's regularly used for living space because people like to sit under the trees. So the Gemara tells a case, Mau Yehuda Ikla Leveir Rav Huna by Yehuda, and Mau Yehuda, which could be the regular Rav Yehuda in Shas, so it could be somebody else, one time visited the house of Rav Huna by Yehuda, Chazanhu Lahanhu Delei Avidi Itztavlois. He saw that there was an area over there that was surrounded by a fence. The trees were not in rows, V'kamotaltli B'gadayu, and they're carrying inside this enclosure. Amalei, so he says to him, don't you hold of what Avimi said? We just said before that Rabbi Yehuda had said the name of Avimi that it needs to be in rows. Amalei, said Rabbi Huna, by Yehuda answers, no, because I'm no kind of Nachman, spiritually. I hold like Rabbi Nachman, that it doesn't matter whether the trees are in rows or not. And that, in fact, is the halacha, is that we don't care whether the trees are in rows, just the fact that you have trees there. So again, any area that's planted with trees is in this enclosure is a mokum dira, that the fact that there are trees there doesn't take that away. As opposed to if it's planted with zroim, then we said it does take away, and it makes it that area is now a mokum dira, and if it reaches base sasayim, or if it's a roiv of the enclosure, then you have a problem. So that's what I was mentioning before. I don't know if zroim actually means grass, like for example, like the kind that you have on lawns nowadays. Let's say you go to Prospect Park, for example, you have large areas of it are planted with grass, but people do walk all over the grass and they sit there and they have picnics and they whatever. So I don't know if that would be considered zroim for this purpose, or if zroim just means something that maybe it means food, or maybe it means, I mean, we talked about yesterday whether it could mean flowers, but maybe it means basically an area where people will stay off it because of the plants that are there, whereas grass is not like that. I mean, l'chora, yes, because for example, you have, let's say, practically speaking, people make Erevin in bungalow colonies, for example, and you know, most of a bungalow colony is covered by grass, and nobody seems to worry about that. So that might indicate that a grassy area is not a problem over here. Only an area planted with actual plants or flowers or what have you. Well, that's neither here nor there. The fact that it's fenced in, we're talking about over here an area that's fenced in, and still we're saying that if the planted area is based sasayim, or it's the majority of the enclosed area, then you still have a problem and you can't carry in it. So the fact that we see that in places like that they do make Erevin without a problem maybe indicates that it's not a problem. But you do actually have, again, you do have places where they have large public parks that are much more than Beis Sasayim. Those are not a mokum dira in the sense that people don't necessarily use them by day and by night. Because, for example, let's say playgrounds, for example, yeah, they can well be closed, for example. So then we might so in fact those can create a problem. If you make an Eruv in that neighborhood, you need to make sort of a Pesach around those parks, for example, to separate them off from the otherwise you have the problem. Nifrat's the Makom Asur law. You have the problem that a place which is mutter to carry in is completely open to a place where it's also to carry in. So yeah. So this is another factor to consider when it comes to city Eruvin.
If I have a house that has 5 acres of land,
give me one second, Avram Moshe. Eli was in the middle, was finishing up a question. As far as the bungalow colony went, you still need to make an Eruv Chatzera in a bungalow colony, because you still need to have the pass, you still need to have the matzah, yeah. Unless everybody is eating all in one place, in which case you don't. But yeah, okay. So what do you want to ask, Avram Moshe? If you have a house.
Alexander, if I have a house with 5 acres of land, forest land, and what's the din over there?
So the din is that we're going to talk about soon a concept called posach al vasayf hukaf. You can have where you opened up an entrance from your house into this area, and then you fenced it in. So now that area is considered hukaf ladira, because you created it to begin with as an extension of your house, and you're going to be using it regularly, so then you'd be allowed to carry in the whole thing. But if it's the kind of thing, but if it's the other way around, hukaf al vasayf pasach, first it was enclosed, later on you decided that, you know what, I'd like to be able to get back and forth from my house to it all the time, then that's no good, unless you do, as we're going to talk now in the Gemara, what you can do in order to fix that up. So,
but if it's a house that has a garden, but my lot extends around 5 acres of land. What?
So again, a garden is a different issue. A garden, we're saying, is not a makom dira, because a person doesn't usually go into a garden both by day and by night. So then you start getting into a problem if that area is more than base sasayim, or if it's most of the enclosure. So maybe I'm not sure about that. Maybe indeed you could fix that up still by making it posach al vasayf hukaf, thereby demonstrating that you plan to use it on a regular basis. I'm not real sure about that, though, because again, you know, the fact that you actually have plants growing over there shows, you know, you're not going to be going into there all the time because you don't want to ruin the plants. So I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure about that last point if you have a garden. But if you have, you're talking about a forested area. So again, Bepashtus, that would be an example where Pasach L'Vasev Hukaf would work. But now we're going to talk about, so what happens if it was the other way around? What happens if it was enclosed already? You decided you want to make it an extension of your house. You want to be able to use it on a regular basis, and you want to be able to carry in there on Shabbos, even though it's larger than Beis Sasayim. So how do you do to fix that up? So Amar Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel, Karpif Yosim Beis Sasayim Shalei Hukaf Ladira, a Karpif larger than Beis Sasayim, which was not originally enclosed for living purposes. Later on, let's say Rashi says, you built your house nearby, and then that's still no good. The Karpif still counts as a Karpif, and you can't carry in it more than 4 amos. Kate said, Hu Oisa, what do you do to fix up the situation? You make a breach in the wall more than 10 amos wide, then you fence that back in, you put back up the wall. So you make the breach narrower than 10 amos, and we've learned before that up to 10 amos can be considered a doorway, and beyond that, beyond 10 amos is considered a breach and is mevatel the mechitza. So there you go. It comes out, therefore, in effect, that you've made a whole new mechitza, because the fact that you had a breach in it, 10 amos, took its status as a mechitza away, and now you rebuilt it, and now you have a breach less than 10 amos, so it's back to being a mechitza, and now that mechitza is after you set up, is after you built the house, so therefore you're good. Okay. Iboilahu. So now we have a question. What if you didn't do the whole breach all at once? Parats amma v'godar amma. What if a person broke down one amma of the wall and then he rebuilt it? Or parats amma v'godar, then he repeats the same thing. Adchi shlimi l'yosim ha'eser, and eventually he's done more than 10 ammas like that, but he did it piecemeal. So there was no time when there was an actual breach of more than 10 amos, but altogether the total rebuilt part of the wall is more than that. So Mahu, what would be the din? So he answered him, Lav Hainu Ditnan, isn't that exactly the same thing as a case that we find in connection with Hilchos Tumah V'Taharah? And once we discuss that point and we have the answer to that, which we're going to do over the next 10 lines or so, then we're going to have the answer to our case over here. So Ditnan, we learn in a Mishnah, in Kalim, Kol Klei Balibatim Shiurin Kerimonim. All kalim of balabatim, the shear that we're talking specifically about wooden kalim, that is the shear of the size of a hole that will make that they're not makabel tumah anymore, or for that matter, that if they were tumah, then the tumah goes away, is if they have a hole the size of that pomegranates will fall out of. We had this concept before. We had it before on Daf Dalet. We had it. Yep. So we had it in Shabbos. We had it in Brachos. Yeah. So okay. So that's the basic din. If a kli eitz belonging to a balabas has a hole large enough that pomegranates will fall out of it, we talked about, does it mean one pomegranate? Does it maybe mean three pomegranates together? Does it maybe mean the size of pomegranates where three grow together? Whatever it is, that keli is not makabel tumah anymore. And if it was tumah, then the tumah goes away. That's dafka kalim of a balabayas, because if it's kalim that belonged to somebody who's selling them, then even a smaller amount, even a smaller hole would be mataher them, because he's not going to be able to sell them with a hole in it. Anyway.
Why would you call it a keli if it's got a hole that can drop three remaining?
Well, that's the point. Therefore, it's not considered a keli anymore. That's exactly the point. So now, boy Chizkia. So now, Chizkia asks the question: Nikav b'motzi zayis. What happened? We had this discussion in Shabbos as well. What happens if the keli developed a hole the size where olives will fall out of it? The sosmai, and then you closed up the hole because of a nikav k'motzi zayis. Then nearby, another hole developed, also the size that olives will fall out. The sosmai, and you closed it up. Adchi shlimer l'motzi rimon. Eventually, again, the total rebuilt area of the keli is the size of motzi rimon, but there was no one time when there was a hole the size for a pomegranate to fall out. Mahu, so what would be the din? Would the keli still be makabel tumah or not? V'omale Rabbi Yechanan, and Rabbi Yechanan, who was Chizkiya's Talmud, answers him, Rebbe, shanisa lanu, you've taught us a different Mishnah in Kalim from that Mishnah and your explanation about it, we can learn the answer to this question. The Mishnah says, sandal shanifsika achas me'oznav, a sandal. Now a sandal normally consists of, you have a flat piece, which is the sole of it, which is what you step on. It's made out of leather or wood or whatever. Then you have attached to it, you have attached to it a couple of loops. We talked about in Shabbos. You have oznayim and you have tarsias. Tarsias are the loops to which the straps of the sandal are attached. They loop through those, and then you tie them around your foot. We're not going to be focusing on those. We're going to be focusing on the oznayim, which Rashi explained over there. The osnayim of it are little pieces of leather or whatever that stick out of the sandal on the sides. You use them when you're putting on the sandal. You hold on to them. You're sort of like handles attached to the sandal to be able to put it on. Flaps, kind of. Yeah. Anyway, it's fine. Yeah, like the loop that you have on the back of some shoes nowadays. Yeah, might be a good example of that. Okay. Anyway. So the Mishnah says sandal shenifsika achas me'oznav. If one of these osnayim, one of these handles broke off, the tikna, and then he fixed it, tomei midras, the sandal is still tomei midras. And let's first learn the Mishnah, and then we'll talk about a couple of possibilities, what's going on over here. Nifsika shniya v'tikna, if the second one broke and he fixed it, tohar b'mina midras, then now the sandal is not tummy midras anymore, abel tummy maga midras, but it's tummy because it touched something which was midras. In other words, now it's a rishon l'tumah. So what do we mean, in other words? So Rashi explains over here, it means like this. When the first oizen breaks off, actually, when the Mishnah says, and he fixed it, it doesn't even have to be. The same din would apply if he didn't fix it. It would still be makabel tumah because it's still usable with one oizen. So the only reason it mentions that he fixed it is because if you didn't fix it, then there's no chiddush that if the second one breaks off, that it's not makabel truma, that it's not makabel truma anymore because you can't use it anymore. Without either oizen, you can't use it as a functional keli. But you still have, Rashi explains, when the second oizen came off, at the moment it's coming off, you have the oizen was still part of a keli that was tomei midras, because a Zav previously wore this shoe or whatever. So now you have, as that piece, so what you have is like this. When the piece is attached still to the sandal, then you have, it's a concept called Tumas Beis Astarim. The place, the point at which it's attached to the rest of the sandal is hidden from view because it's inside the leather itself. So it's not Matame the rest of it, but what we have is at the moment when it's coming off, the last moment before it breaks off, then you have at that point, it's considered it's touching it, and therefore it makes it a Rishon LaTruma. So that's according to Rashi. Tosfos mentions over here, now when we learned this in Shabbos, we learned that Rashi had two explanations over there. First, Rashi had explained that there's two ways of looking at it, basically. One way of looking at it is that that again, it's tomei magra midras, because what we say is when it only, so it's no longer usable as a keli once it's missing both of them, but it's still tomei because the oizen, the handle touched it while it was still tomei midras. The problem with that is Tosfos says that it's tumas beis astarim. So Rashi himself, when we learned this at Shabbos, we learned that Rashi himself changed his mind. So originally Rashi explained that after the two Oznayim break off, it's not considered a Keli anymore. Therefore, it can't be Tomei Midras, but it can be Tomei Maga Midras from the fact that the thing came off as it was coming off. The other way of looking at it is still a Keli, but it's not a Keli that's suitable for Midras anymore because you can't wear it. You can use it for other purposes. So it's not that it's completely not Mekabel Truma anymore. It's just that it's not Mekabel Truma's Midras because you can't wear it anymore. So if we take that view of it, So Tosfos goes on to explain, if we take that view of it, then we would say that when we say that he fixed the first one, it would actually have to be that way. In order for it to be continue to be Mekabel Trumas Midras, the Mishnah would actually, when the Mishnah says that he fixed the first one, not like Rashi's saying over here, it didn't need to mention it, it's just mentioning it as a Chiddush, it actually would have to be that you fixed it, because if you didn't fix it, then as soon as the second one comes off, you don't have a functional Keli anymore. You have two on each shoe. You have one at the front end, one at the back end. We learned about in Shabbos. So that obviously this is a sandal. It's different than our shoes. Yeah. Anyway, the point is. So you have a couple of different ways of explaining it. So one way of explaining again is that even after the first oizen comes off, it doesn't matter whether you fix it. It only matters what happens when the second one comes off. Do we say that it's not a keli anymore at that point? Or do we say that once the first one was fixed, then even if the second one breaks off later, the fact is it is still a functional keli. It's got one oizen. It's still got the one handle. But we'd say if you didn't fix the first one before the second one broke off, then there's nothing to talk about. Then it wouldn't even be a Rishon LaTruma because not even a Keli anymore. As opposed to if you fix the first one, when it says that you fix the second one, then we would say the other way around. The reason why it mentions you fix the second one is only in order to be parallel with the first part. We said you fix the first one, so it mentions you fix the second one. But really, according to that way of looking at it, we would say the same din would apply even if you didn't fix the second one.
Then build the,
if you're trying to deal, right, exactly. We're trying to,
no good.
Right, so
then
what,
build the carp off, then the house.
So the other way around. You have to build the house, then the carpath. But what we're talking about is you have to enclose the carpath after the house is built. We're trying to deal with the case over here where you had a carpath already built. You want to break down the wall. No, not Nitfel. You need to make it into a mokum shahuka fladira. So you want to break down. So we said before that if you break down the wall enough that you have a breach of more than 10 amas and then you fix it, then you're good. What if you do it one amma at a time? So now it's similar to the shoe over here. You want to make that this carpath should be considered that it was made after the house, right? It did physically exist before the house, right? Exactly. So again, Rashi and Tosfos are discussing over here these two ways that we can understand this situation with the shoe. Again, to recap, one way of looking at it, it depends on the question, basically. Once the two things fall off, do we consider it a keli of any kind or not? So one way of looking at it is we say that once the first oizen breaks off, then it doesn't matter whether he fixed it or not. The question is what happens when the second one breaks off? Do we consider it a keli or not? Or that it does matter if you fix the first one, because then you have at least it's still a functional keli. You can still use it. You can still use it to wear. But when the second one comes off, the fact is at one time or another, you had both of them off. That was one of Rashi's explanations over there. That's what I'm saying. Rashi himself, Tosfos mentions over here that Rashi himself changed his mind over there about the question, what happens with the shoe after both those naim are off? Is it, we say, it's still considered some kind of keli because you could use it for other purposes, or is it not considered a keli at all? So that's what I'm saying. That affects the question of what we say, what would be the din if he didn't fix the first one before the second one broke off, right? Okay. So for Amrit Allah, so now Rabbi Yochanan says to Chizkiah, you told us regarding that Mishnah, you have to ask Mishnah Rishona. So what's the difference once the first one breaks off and you still, Jehokaima Shnia, and you're saying the second one is still there, so therefore it's still considered a shoe, and therefore it's still Tomei Midras. Shnia Nami, Hokaima Rishona. So what? So you could say the same thing. When the second one breaks off, you already fixed the first one. So therefore, at all times, it already has one, it still has one oizen. So why should we say now it's not Tomei Midras, it's only a Rishon Latruma for having touched the Midras? Ve Amrit Lon Allah. So you, Chizkiah, explain to us, because you have a concept, Ponim Chadoshes, Bo'olakan, because it's like a new face. Once you have both Oznayim broke off, so even though you fix, so again, you fix the first one before the second one broke off, but at that point, once the second one breaks off, even if you fix it, so now you have a fully functional sandal again, but you still have that the two Oznayim are new, and therefore it's considered like a new Kaili. So therefore, it can't be, it's can't still have the Trumas Midras that it had from before. It can be considered a Rishon Latruma because, again, when the flaps were attached or at the moment they were coming off or whatever, they touched it and made a Rishon Latruma, but not more than that. No. So what we're saying is that, what we're saying is, in other words, something that touches a midras becomes a Rishon Latruma. So what you have is, in effect, when you have the sandal itself is still Tomei Midras, you attach the new flap to it, but now we're saying, now the second one breaks off. So again, one way of looking at it is that the sandal now becomes Rishon Latruma at the moment when that second flap is breaking off, because the second flap itself is still Tomei Midras. So when they're touching at that moment, it becomes a Rishon Latruma. So you can say while it was attached, or you can say as it's coming off. Anyway, the point is that you have ponim chadoshes bo'olakan. When you have two new flaps on it, then it's considered like a whole new keli. So the old tumas midras no longer exists with it. So the same thing, hachanami, the same thing. And your question about the keli where holes developed in it, one hole at a time, and we said the case was a wooden keli where you have a hole the size of an olive and another hole the size of an olive, and so forth, and each time you closed it up, but eventually it becomes motzi riman. So the same thing, ponim chadoshes bo'olakan, hachanami, ponim chadoshes bo'olakan. The same thing over here, you have ponim chadoshes, And therefore, in other words, no, so the Kaibrif, we're going to get back to in a second. But right, the point is that in Rabbi Yochanan's answer to Chizkiah, who was his Rebbe, he's saying, so the same thing with that wooden keli, the same thing. Once you have the total area that was fixed is Motzi Rimon, it doesn't matter that there was no one time when there was a Motzi Rimon hole. The fact is Ponim Chadosh is Bo'o Lekan, and therefore the same din would apply. So yes, the same thing would apply to our Kaibrif over here, the same idea. In other words, you broke down part of the wall and then fixed it, and another part of the wall and fixed it, etc. Eventually you reach so that you fenced in and you re-fenced in an area such that there's not a breach of 10 amos anymore. And before that there was, you have the total area that you fixed is more than 10 amos. Then yes, that would work. So in the story with Rabbi Yochanan and Chizkiah, Chizkiah was very impressed. Kori Alei, he said on Rabbi Yochanan, the expression, less than bar inish. This is not a person. This is a malach who could come up with such a great answer. Ikadamri could goin dain bar nash, or another version, as Chizkiah said, this is what a real person should be. This is an Adam Gadol. He taught him the halacha, but Rabbi Yochanan is the one who came up based on that halacha from the sandal, who was able to use it to explain our question about the wooden keli. So Chizkiah was very impressed that he had the cup to be able to draw an analogy from one thing, which is what Gemara is all about. You know, we talk about there's Mishnah. You know, we talk about all over Shas. There's Mishnah, which is knowing the basic halachas that are in the Mishnayos and the Braises and whatever. And then you have Gemara, which is the analysis of it. And among other things, being able to draw an analogy from one thing to another and be able to derive new halachas that way. So Rabbi Yochanan had done that over here, and therefore Chizkiah was very impressed. We learned, by the way, in connection with that in Shabbos, when we learned that, we learned the little piece of Agadta on it, the famous thing that im rishonim kamalachim onu k'bnei Adam, and if im rishonim a b'nei Adam, then onu k'chamorim. So one explanation of it is that actually it relates to these two expressions that Chizkiah is using on Rabbi Yochanan. If Chizkiah is saying on Rabbi Yochanan, this is not a person, meaning this is a malach, so that's showing that rishonim a kamalachim, then we have the right to consider ourselves people. As opposed to, if we say that he said on him, this is what a real person should be, we're not on that level, then we're kachamorim. Yeah. Okay. So that's the answer. Therefore, it doesn't have to be that the breach was made all at once. You can make the breach and fix it piecemeal.
Do we go back to Shabbos? Or
we're back to Shabbos. Amr of Kahana, Rechava Shachori Abatim Ein Metautlan by Ella Bedalad Amos. You can fix it piecemeal. That's what we're saying, yeah.
Okay.
So, Amr of Kahana. Rechava shachori abatim ein metautlin by ela bedalad amos. The wide area, rechava, like a backyard, the doors of the houses don't open into it. So, it's not mukaf ladira because you're not using it regularly as living space. It's like, we're not talking, for example, like you have nowadays a backyard. You have the back door of your house open into it and you go in and out regularly. Here, we're talking about this is an area behind the houses. They don't usually use it on a regular basis because they don't have the doors of the houses open into it. They don't have back doors opening into it. So, therefore, it's considered like a kaibrif. And if it's larger than base sasayim, ein metaltlin by ela bedalad amos, then you can only carry in there up to 4 amos at a time, like any kaimelis. The Amar Rab Nachman, Rab Nachman said on that, im posach loy pesach, if you open up a door into this rechava from the houses, mutter the talta bekulay, then you're allowed to carry in the whole thing, even if it's larger than beis sasayim, because pesach matiroi, because the opening that you made is matir, and now you're using it on a regular basis. Now that would only apply though if you first opened the door and then you fenced in the area. But if you first enclosed it and then you opened up the door into it, then no, it wouldn't work, and it would be a kaimelis, and you still can only carry in there up to 4 amos. We know now how to fix it, but yeah. So the question is, pasach l'vasayv hukaf pshita. Okay, well then, what's the chiddush? If Rav Nachman is talking about where you first built a back door in your house, then you fenced in this area, the rechava shachori abatim, obviously you can carry there. That's exactly like a chotzer in the front of your house. What's the chiddush? The answer is, lo tzricha de'isbe beid dori. The answer is, the chiddush is, even if that rechava shachori abatim has in it a threshing area. So you have like this, in other words. So you have, there's the house, then you have the rechava behind the house. In the rechava, closer to the door of the house, closer to the back door that you just built over there, you have a threshing area. So Maud Tema Adaita de Bedori Avde. So you might think, okay, this person made a door over there. Fine. The primary purpose he made that door was to be able to get in and out of this threshing area. So not necessarily was he making it for the purpose of using the rest of the Rechava. So maybe the rest of the Rechava should still not be considered Pasach Lavasayf Hokaf. Kamash Malan. Therefore, the chiddush is Reb Nachman is telling us that it doesn't matter the fact that there's this Beit Dori in between. The fact is, you can use this door to get back and forth from your house to the Rechava, and therefore now the Rechava is considered Hukaf Ladera.
So the picture is like, where is the threshing
door? So I don't see a picture of it. I don't see a picture of it in these, it does matter. Rashi, in other words, the point is, in the end, it doesn't matter, but in the Hava Amina, we would have thought that Rashi describes that the threshing floor is right outside the door. Goren, acharabayis kodem hekefa rechava, Rashi says. The threshing floor is right outside, right behind the house, before you reach the actual area enclosed by the rechava. So in other words, the idea might be, in other words, the threshing floor is maybe not even within, it's not even within the walls itself. You have the walls of the Rechava, and then like maybe you could have, let's say, spaces of less than 10 amos on each side, right? And it's still considered a mechitza. So you could have, let's say, that outside the door, you have, let's say, a threshing area of 5 or 6 amos wide, and only then do you have the walls of the Rechava begin. So now you would think you don't go from the house directly from the Rechava. You have to pass through this threshing area. So you would think, therefore, maybe the door doesn't count towards the Rechava. And the answer is it still does. In the end, though, it doesn't matter where in the Rechava the threshing area is, because either way, it's multi, right?
But even if it's in position.
Right. Exactly. It still works. Right. Okay. Now another din. What if you have a karpif more than Beis Sosayim, you did surround it for Dira, so far so good, you should be able to carry in it no matter how large it is, as we said, but Vinismale Mayim, now it got full of water, and now the question is, what does the water do to it? Savar Rabbanan Lamema, Kizroim, Domu Ha'asur. The Rabbanan thought to say that should be considered like seeds, like we planted over there, and we said before that would be Asur, because the idea is an area that's planted with seeds or plants or whatever, you don't usually walk there because you don't want to ruin the plants, so therefore it's not considered a Makam Dira. The same thing when there's water there, you're not going to be walking there anymore. Therefore, it should be Asur. Meaning, in other words, based on the criteria that we said before, at the top of the Amud, we said, according to the Yom Yomi Difti, that it would be if the water covers most of the area of the Karpif, or if it covers more than base Sasayim of it, even if it's less than half. But Amr Lahur of Abba, Avur de Rav, Achur de Rav, actually, it says on the side, Braden of Mesharshia, so Rav Abba, the brother of Rav, the brother of Rav, the son of Rav Mesharshia, this is not the regular Rav and Shas, there's a different Rav, or Rava, it says on the side, Hochi Amrin and Mishmei de Rava, this is what we say in the name of Rava, that no, Mayim Kinetoyim Damu Rishori, the water is actually considered like trees, therefore it's still mutter. We said before that even if trees are planted in the area, it doesn't take away from its status as a mokum dira. So the same thing, when there's water over there, it also doesn't. But with the criteria, Omer Amemer, yeah. First of all, Amemer says, V'hu d'chazu l'tashmishta. That works only if the water is suitable for use. Meaning, Rashi says, for drinking. So if it's clear water, which you can drink, then ein l'cha dira ma'ula mizu. Then there's no better dira than that. But now you have a nice water supply there. Well, fine. But if it's roi l'shsia, the Rashba brings up the possibility, does it dafka have to be roi l'shsia? Is it maybe good enough if it's not roi for drinking? Maybe if it's good enough for washing, for washing clothes or whatever. No, if it's just water that's good enough for watering plants, there's no reason that would be considered a makam dira, no more so than the plants themselves are considered a, yeah. No. So only if the water is suitable for tashmish, which again, Rashi brings, and this is how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that it means davka for drinking, the Rashba brings up the possibility, what if it's roi for laundry? Okay. But if that water is not suitable for use, for drinking or whatever, then we wouldn't say that. Then we wouldn't say that it's considered part of the dira. Amar Rav Ashi, and Rav Ashi adds, Udchazi on the Tashmishta Nami. This is your point about how much of it there is. Even if the water is suitable for use, even if it's drinkable water, Nami, Layamoran, Elisha, and Ba'umko Yosim Ve Sasayim, only if the deep part of it, meaning the part that's 10 or more Tfachim deep, is not larger than Ve Sasayim. So you'd have to have, in other words, that so you have different parts of it. Some parts of it are shallow, and the shallow parts we ignore when we're counting the area, because less than 10 tefachim is not really considered is not really considered a separate area. Rashi brings from Shabbos that it's considered basically just like a puddle. And the same way as if you have something like that in Rosh Hashanah, it's still counted as part of Rosh Hashanah because people walk through it or walk over it or whatever. So the same thing here, the part that's less than 10 tefachim deep would not be counted towards it. But the part that is 10 tefachim deep, if that area is more than Beis Sasayim, then it would still be Osir. So that would be you have like over here in the pictures. So you have this one. You have the sides of it are shallow. So only the middle of it is 10 tefachim deep. So you have that area is less than Beis Sasayim. So Rav Ashi is saying that would be fine. But over here, where you have a full Beis Sasayim that is covered with water to a depth of 10 tefachim, then it would be no good. He says, even if it was clean water, but for drinking, right? But the Gemara says, "V'lav milsehi." However, that last statement of Rav Ashi is not correct. The fact is, even if it is more than, even if the water is more than Beis Sasayim, as long as it is drinkable water, it's still okay. Midi dehava akaria deperi, because it's like a carrier of fruit. Rashi has two explanations of carrier. One is that carrier is Maloshin Kri, which means a pile. Imagine you have a pile of fruit or produce or whatever in your chotzer. It doesn't matter how big that pile is. It still doesn't take away the status of the place as a makom dira. You could sell the water, so the same thing as you could sell the fruit. Yeah. The other explanation, Rashi says, is kaya de peri means just the opposite of a pile. It means a deep pit in which you store peiros. They did that. You know, they'd store peiros in pits. So you had to keep them cold or whatever. So the same idea. In other words, that even though it's very deep, you're allowed to take fruit out of it on Shabbos. So the same thing over here, even if, so it's not mevatel anything. So the same thing over here, even if it's deep and wide, you'd be able to take water from it on Shabbos and it would be mutter. So that's the final halacha, therefore, is that if you have water in the chotzer, that so if the water is drinkable, so if the water is drinkable, then it doesn't matter how large an area it covers, even if it's more than Beis Sasayim, and even if it's more than 10 tefachim deep, you're still allowed to carry in that chotzer, and you'd still be able to draw water from it, and so forth. I guess it's relevant to the question of if a person has a pool, except that the water in a pool is not drinkable. So therefore, you could have an issue if the pool is I don't know how. Well, it was drinkable until you added the chemicals. So I suppose if you don't have the chemicals, then your pool is going to be full of algae. But yeah, I guess. Okay, if you have the ability to have a freshwater pool that you don't have to add chlorine or whatever to it, and then yeah, okay, so maybe. All right, onward.
So would it be a very big pool?
So it would have, yeah. I mean, because we're talking about there's only, yeah. I mean, if it's less than base Sasayim, we're saying there's nothing to talk about anyway, right? Yeah. Okay, fine. Another case. And since we mentioned about a rechava shachorei abatim, so now we're going to talk about a more complicated case involving a rechava, involving one of these open but fenced in areas, which we're saying is a karpif and more than Beis Sasayim, you have an issue with it. So the scenario was as follows: Hahi rechava dahavoi bepumnara. There was a rechava that was in Pumnara. Pumnara is the name of a city in Bavel. Although Rabbi Hananel over here explains that actually Pumnara means near the edge of the river, because we're going to see actually the scenario was it was fairly close to a river. Anyway, dechad gisa have a pasiach lamasa. So now the scenario was like this: you had the rechava in the middle. One end of it had a an alleyway over there that went into the city proper, that went into a mavui, in other words, you had at one end of the rechava there was a mavui, where the end of the mavui opened out into this rechava, and that mavui was one of the mavuis of the city. You have houses around it, like any regular mavui. V'chad gisa have a pasuach l'shvil shor kramim. The other end, there was a path that went through the vineyards. That path through the vineyards went down to the bank of the river. Rashi learns over here that the path through the vineyards also had houses opening into it. Tosfos disagrees and says that actually that one did not have houses opening into it. You actually have two diagrams they gave over here. One is supposed to be according to Rashi, and the other one is supposed to be according to Tosfos. It looks like they may have made a mistake over here, because in the one according to Tosfos, they also drew houses opening to the Shvil Shel Kerumim, and Tosfos says they weren't. So what's the difference? It looks like they just flipped the diagram 180 degrees and left everything as is, but according to Tosfos. So here you have the Rechava is in the middle over there. You have the in the first diagram over here, you have the Shvil Shel Kerumim leading down to the river at the bottom, and then you have the Mavri at the top, and the other one you have it the other way around. I think they made a mistake over here and then drew them both the same, just flipped 180 degrees. I don't know. Anyway, Rashi explains the Shvil Shel Kerumim had houses opening into it, which means in effect it's another Mavri. And again, Tosfos learns that not. There's also the point, the fact that it goes down to the bank of the river. The bank of the river itself is considered a mechitza in a certain sense, because you have it slopes down from the edge into the, yeah. So as long as we learned before, as long as it's tel amislaket yud tfachem mitoch dal ramas, as long as it's steep enough that in a horizontal distance of 4 amas it would rise at least 10 tfachim, then it is considered a mechitza. And here you have that. So the problem was like this. The problem is the Rechava is a Carmelis, because it's not Mukaf Ladira. People are not regularly going into it by day and by night. So now you have the Mavri, which is open into it, is going to be a problem to carry in, because Nifrat's Lamakama Asula. It's open into a Rechava where you're also to carry. Therefore, it would be also to carry in the Mavri as well. The Shvil Shel Kerumim, same problem. That's what we're going to talk about. A lechi is one possibility. We're going to go through the possibilities over here. Yeah. So Rashi explains. Now, we did learn in the first perek about a case of mavri hakol al rechava, where you had a mavri that opened out, where one end of it opened up into a rechava, and we said that under certain conditions that's fine. But the difference is that rechava was used for dira. Here it's not. So Amar Abaya Hechi Nevid. So Abaya says, what do we do in order to be matir, to be able to carry in that whole area? Now, the obvious thing to do would be, we said, so if you have a place that's not Hukaf Ladira, no problem, break down the wall 10 amos, then rebuild it, and therefore you're good. In this case, though, it was a stone wall around it, and it would have been very hard to do that, to break it down that much and rebuild it. It doesn't have to be a dira inside it. It has to be a dira open directly into it. In this case, you have diras opening into the mavri, and according to Rashi, also to the Shvil Shel Kerumim. So that would have been good enough if we broke it down and rebuilt it, but it was too expensive or too difficult or whatever to do that. By the way, in Shulchan Aruch, it brings an interesting idea that Shlomo Sadeshin brings up. Maybe you have a way to do it without breaking down the wall. He discusses maybe what you can do, he says, is you would pile dirt next to the wall until you get on both sides, until you reach that from, until you get to the point where from the top of the pile of dirt until the top of the wall is less than 10 tefachim. So it's not considered a wall in halacha. You leave the dirt there for at least one Shabbos to be mevatel it. Then you take away the dirt, and there you go. Now you've rebuilt the wall, in effect. And the Tumas Hadeshin discusses the pros and cons. Does that in fact work? Basically, the question boils down to, if you mevatel that dirt there, but only for one Shabbos, you don't intend to leave that dirt there forever. So does that work or not? Is basically what it boils down to. No, because the difference is, there you physically took down the wall. Here you have, the question is the dirt bottle to the ground underneath it, and therefore it's considered like you have a wall less than 10. You know, think of it like this. Let's say, for example, if instead of dirt, let's say, for example, you put a bunch of boxes or suitcases or whatever next to the wall. Obviously, you're not mevatel them there, so it doesn't reduce the height of the wall, right? So the question is the fact that you had dirt there for one Shabbos, is that enough to be mevatel it or not? So, the Alter Rebbe says that maybe since it's a matter of divrei sofrim, maybe you can be makel. So I guess conceivably, according to that explanation, maybe they could have done that over here. But anyway, they weren't going to do that. So Abaye says, Hechi Nevin, what are we supposed to do? Le'eved le'mechitza aguda denahara, should we make a mechitza by the bank of the river? In other words, what we should consider is that the shvil shokromim is an extension of the rechava. Then what we do is we put a mechitza around the end of the shvil shokromim by the river. Now we're considering, so now, yeah, there's a large area over there. The rechava plus the shvil makes up one big area we're going to consider. We put a mechitza here by the end of the shvil. In effect, what you have is now one big area where you added a mechitza, and therefore now it's going to be mutter to carry in that whole enclosure, the shvil plus the. It means, in other words, we're going to add one wall right by the edge of the river, right? That's the problem. That's the problem. It doesn't help to put one mechitza right on top of the other. The riverbank itself already counts as a mechitza. So that's the point. Putting another mechitza there on top of it does not help anything. It doesn't make it more hukaf ladira than it was before. Now, Tosfos mentions that fine. What they could have done is they could have put a fence more than four tefachim away from the riverbank. But they didn't want to do that. They didn't want to shorten the usable area of the shvil. Tosfos actually has a different explanation of making the mechitza aguda denara. Tosfos learns that actually what it would be is they would put the wall on the other side of the river, exactly opposite the shvil. And therefore, it would be considered like it's a wall that closes off that side of the shvil, even though it's across the river. Well, it depends how far it is, right? We'd have to be talking about that the river was less than 10 amos wide, right? The problem is still, again, that the problem is still that the river itself already counts as a mechitza, and therefore, okay. So that doesn't work. So we have another possibility. Maybe what we do is we put a tzuras haPesach on the entrance from the Rechava to the Shvil Shokromim. So over here, we put a tzuras haPesach over here. And therefore, again, what we're going to say is now what that accomplishes is that it helped. Now we're going to use a concept called Migui. We're going to say Migui because it helps for the Shvil Shokromim. Now the Shvil Shokromim in and of itself will be allowed to carry in because it's now separated from the Rechava, then because of that, it'll also help that Tzuras HaPesach is now considered like making a new wall for the Rechava, and therefore it'll be mutter to carry in the Rechava itself. No, because once you have a Tzuras HaPesach, it's not considered completely open anymore. The Tzuras HaPesach, as long as it fits the criteria of a Tzuras HaPesach, it's not considered open anymore. So can we say we would do that? The problem is also gamli shadyanle. The problem is camels, when people come through with camels and people go through down with their camels down to the river to give them to drink, are going to knock it down. So no way, you can't say no camels allowed. Practically speaking, people are going to come through with their camels and they're going to knock it down. And if it's going to be regularly knocked down like that, as it is, Rashi says, as it is, the shvil itself, this path through the vineyards over there, as it is very narrow. If you put the pieces of a Tzuras HaPesach on the sides of it, making it even narrower, then the camels are likely to knock against it all the time and knock it down. So that's an interesting point that Achronim talk about. In fact, the Chazon Ish says, based on this Gemara, maybe you have a proof that when you're making a Tzuras HaPesach, that the poles of it actually have to be inside the walls rather than next to them, because otherwise, if it's next to them, what's the problem? But there is another possibility, though, that maybe what the Gemara means over here is that the Tzuras HaPesach won't be tall enough for the camels to clear it. Now, you could conceivably make it taller in that case, but the problem is then it's not going to be as sturdy. And in particular, Tosfos mentions earlier in the Masechta that the practical problem with making a Tzuras HaPesach too tall is the wind is going to blow it down. So you can't do that over here. And the point is, if the camels are going to knock it down regularly, then it can't be considered a Tzuras HaPesach, or if the wind is going to knock it down regularly, it can't. We learned in the first Perek that a Tzuras HaPesach has certain rules. One of them, it has to be strong enough to be able to hold the door, but it has to be strong enough to be able to stand there on a regular basis. It has to be able to stand in Ruach Metzuya. Yeah, and in effect, if you have camels coming through you all the time, it's not standing in a Ruach Metzuya. So that doesn't work either. So Ella Amar Abaya. So rather, Abaya says, here's what we can do to fix up the situation. Le'evid lechi apischa de shvil shokramim. What we'll do is we'll make a lechi A lechi is much narrower. A lechi, we learned in the first paddock, has no minimum width. It can even just be a stripe of paint on the wall, basically, as long as it's strong enough that it could stand by its own. So therefore, it's thin enough that the camels are not going to interfere with it. So, and also, it only has to be 10 tefachim tall, as opposed to the poles of a tzoras ha-pesach, again, have to be tall enough, yeah. Anyway, so you do that. You make a lechi by the entrance of the shvil shokramim, where it enters the rechava. The migui, the mahani, the shvil shokramim. Again, we're going to use the same logic of migui. It helps for the shvil shokramim because now it's not considered open to a kamelis because you have a lechi over there. In the same way as a regular mavui, you put a lechi on there, and now you're allowed to carry in the mavui. The same thing over here. So that works, and therefore migui that it helps for the shvil shokramim mahani nami l'rochava. Therefore, we can also consider that it helps for the rochava. That now it's considered as though we put up a new wall for the rochava, and therefore that we'd be allowed to carry in it. Now, so Rashi explains, you still do need migui over here because otherwise the entrance itself is not more than is less than 10 amos wide. So let's say the entrance was 8 or 9 amos wide. If you fenced in part of that, that wouldn't help. You still have before you had an entrance, and now you still have an entrance. So in order to make it, so the only way we can make it work is by using migui on this lechi. In other words, the point is not that we closed up part of the doorway. The point is that we put up a lechi. So the migui is because the lechi helps for the shvil shokramim. We've now made the shvil shokramim. In effect, beforehand, the shvil shokramim was a mavui sosum because it was closed in on three sides. It had walls on two sides with the houses and chatzeres opening into it. It had the bank of the river on the third side. So all we had was the open side to the rechava. So therefore, like any mavui sosum, we can put a lechi up. So good. Now the lechi helps that now we're able to carry in the shvil shokramim. Abaya's chiddush is that also we can say, now that lechi also is able to help for the rechava itself, that now we're saying that it makes it considered as though the rechava was fenced in l'shem dira, and therefore that you'd be able to carry in it. Even though it's open, and even though all you have is a lechi over there, yeah. Okay. Amar le Rava, but Rava says that's no good. Yomru lechi moyel l'shvil shokramim d'alma. People are likely to think that a lechi always helps for a shvil shokramim, even when it doesn't go to the riverbank, where it's a mavri mefulash. In other words, people are not going to realize that distinction. People are going to think that a mavri mefulash, a regular shvil shokramim, which amounts to a mavri mefulash, needs only a lechi at one end, and that's not correct. You need a tzuras ha-pesach at the other end also. Tosfos explains that Tosfos learns differently. We said before that Tosfos learns that the shvil shokramim does not have houses opening into it. One of the reasons is based on this, because what do you mean? Now, in general, we don't say that we should make a gzera that you can't do something to a mavri sosum because you might confuse it with a mavri mefulash. Why should this case be any different? So therefore, Tosfos learns that the shvil shokramim does not have houses opening into it. So the question was, what? No. The lamed of Yalkagam is either lechi or amin me'elav from the first parak, or you may leido or lo yafshav lo kamachav, and you have different explanations in Tosfos. But anyway, the point is that, No, the point is Tosfos learns, therefore, that the shvil shokramim here does not have houses opening into it. So fine, in this particular case, a lechi might help, but people are going to think that in general, a shvil shokramim, even though it doesn't have houses opening into it and does not usually fit the criteria of a mavui, should be able to have a lechi, and that's no good. We don't want to allow that. Ela Amar Rava Avdin Le Lechi L'Pischa De Masa. No, what we do is I agree, says Rava, you can put up a lechi, but don't put it on the end of the Shvil Shokramim. Put it at the end of the Mavui that opens into this Rechava. The Mavui, which is already part of the city, where we have over here, you have this is the Mavui, and you have other Mavuyas near it, which form the whole area, the whole residential area of the city. Put up the lechi over here at the entrance from the Mavui into the Rechava. And again, the same logic. The Migur De Mahani Le Lechi De Masa. Once we're going to say that the lechi helps to be able to carry in that first mavri. Now, that first mavri itself is probably going to need a tzuras ha-pesach at the other end. Very likely, that mavri is open, the mavri b'pashtus is open to the rest of the city as well, because otherwise, how are they getting back and forth between it and the rest of the city? So fine. So you'd put a tzuras ha-pesach at the end that opens out into the main street of the city. You'd put a lechi over here. And that helps for this. And that helps for this mavri. Therefore, mahani le rechava. Mahani nami le rechava. Therefore, by migui, it's going to work for the rechava as well, and we'll consider it as though the rechava now was fenced in l'shem dira. No. So that's the Terumas Hadeshen. The Terumas Hadeshen offers for, in general, the case, not the specific case over here. In this case, it's much easier to do a lechi. But yeah, the case that the Terumas Hadeshen is talking about, the more general case. You don't have a mavo, you don't have a shvil shel krumim, you don't have nothing, but you haven't. Yeah, you have this area over here, which is fenced in. You want to be able to carry in it. Your house is open to it, but you want to make it l'shem dina. Right, so you put it right. Okay. So hilkach. So therefore, the bottom line is like this: til tulid b'masa gufa shari. Now, once you do that, you'll be able to carry in the rest of the city, meaning in the mavri and in all the other mavoyas and things that open into it. You'll be able to, because you put up a lachi. Til tulid b'rechava gufa shari. You'll also be able to carry in the rechava itself, because now it's hukaf ladira. But mimasa l'rechava, merechava l'masa, what happens, would now, once you set this up, would you be able to carry between the rechava and the mavri that opens into it? So there you have a machlokas. Pligi bar of acha b'rabina. Chad osir v'chad shori. One says it's osir, and the other one says it's osir, and the other one says it's mutter. Because, in other words, the point is, do we look at it that they're two separate chatzeres? Do we look at it that they're two separate chatzeres, and therefore you can't carry from one to the other unless they make an eruv between them? And here, how are you making an eruv with the rechava? There's no houses opening into the rechava. So you only have the mavri itself as opening into the rechava, and we said that it only works on the principle of migri. The other one says it would be mutter because we consider it in effect one big chatzer. So that's what the Gemara says. Man deshari, the one who says it's mutter would say it's mutter. Dehaleka diurin, nobody lives around the rechava itself that would aser the people of the mavri. So therefore, in effect, it's considered an extension of the mavri. The shvil, Rashi explains, is also not asering them because it's like the case that we learned about in the first perek, where you have a small chotzer that's open into a big chotzer, where you have, when you look at it, when you're standing in the big chotzer and looking towards the small one, you still see walls on the both sides of you, because the path to the other one is narrower, and therefore the big one you're still allowed to carry in. It's the small one that you'd have a problem that you can't carry in there on Shabbos. So the shvil shel krumim doesn't create a problem, and you have the rechava itself, because it has nobody living in that, because it has no houses opening into it, is considered in effect an extension of the mavri. So that would be a reason to say it's mutter. Umanda osir, the one who says it's osir, because he says zimnin to have a but urin v'osir l'tatuli, because what you could have is sometimes there might be urin in there. Sometimes you may have a similar situation where there are actually houses opening into the rechava, and therefore they're going to end up carrying, not realizing that it's considered in effect two separate chatzeres. The Gemara mentions elsewhere that whenever we have a machlokas of Acha and Ravina, the halacha is always like the one between them who's makel. Usually, we say in most cases, if I remember correctly, we say in most cases Rav Acha is the one who's makel and the halacha is like him. And in three cases, Ravina is the one who's makel and the halacha is like him. I may have that backwards, but whatever it is, the bottom line is we go according to the one who's makel, and therefore that would be the halacha over here. So you would in fact, in the end, be able to, once you set up this lechi in the scenario that we're talking about, then you would be able to not only to carry in the rechava by itself and in the mavri by itself, you'd be able to carry back and forth between the mavri and the rechava. So you put a lechi on the end of the mavri where it opens up into the rechava. So again, camels are not going to knock down a lechi. It's thin enough that they're not going to knock it down. But the point is you don't have to do anything with the shvil shel krumim, because you don't have to, according to that, you're not doing anything with the shvil shel krumim itself. You're just putting a lechi on the mavri over here. Now already it makes it that the rechava is an area where you're allowed to carry, and therefore it doesn't prevent you from being able to carry in the shvil shel krumim. Well, the shvil shel krumim, again, according to that, the pashtus would end up being a mavri of its own, according to Rashi, that it actually has houses opening into it. So fine, it's going to need its own lechi anyway on those grounds. But its lechi is not the one that's going to be matur the rechava. it's the because like Rava said, then people are going to think that in general, shvil shor kramim, that's good enough. So it's only it's the lechi at the other end, a regular mavui, which everybody recognizes as a regular mavui. That is what that's what's matter the rochava. Okay. What so therefore so you have in the end, so the place you put in the lechi is over here, where the mavui opens out into the rochava. And therefore, a rechava is like a big open area which is fenced in, but it's fenced in, but it's not in and of itself meant madira. It's not the kind of place where people usually use, where people usually go in and out there regularly. The only reason, so like this, it's not like we had to carry in the rechava. The only reason we had a problem in the first place is because since the mavri and the shvil shor kramim are open directly into it, all of that area, and in fact the whole rest of the city, would have been also to carry in if we didn't find a way to fix it up. Because it... Well, because you have a concept called Nifretz L'makom Ha'asola, that if one place is open completely into another area, well, it's also to carry. And here you have the Mavri, the complete end of the Mavri is open, the complete end of the Mavri is open into the Rechava. So the Mavri itself would have been also to carry in, and therefore anything else that opens out into that Mavri also would have... The Migri works, we're saying that once the Lechi counts for the Mavri itself, that it makes it, then the Mavri itself is now a regular Mavri that has three sides, and you're putting a Lechi on the fourth side, and now you're allowed to carry. Therefore, it helps for that Mavri. Therefore, it's also considered as a new wall for the Rechava, and it's also considered a new wall for the Rechava that makes it that now, in effect, we've re-fenced in the Rechava, and now it has a wall that makes it mutter to carry in.
But if it didn't work, then it couldn't work at all.
Then it wouldn't work at all, exactly. Exactly, right.
Because one wall doesn't have to be the whole purpose. And the other
right.
thing I wanted to ask is, did you see anywhere why we always passed in like the more maker?
No, I didn't see anything about. No, you're asking why we always pass in between Rav Acha and Ravina, like the one who's more mekel. No, I haven't seen anything that says specifically why. The Gemara just gives that rule in Psachim, and I think also in Cholin. Yeah, eventually, Be'ez Hashem. Okay, fine. So to be continued tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, with more rules about how we turn
Alexander,
a place into a makom hokaf ladira. Yeah.
When you're in the Rechava, do you have to be able to see the Lechi or not?
But Pashtus not on the same principle at do you have to be able to see the Lechi when you're standing in the Rechava. I would imagine that not on the same principle as we learned in the first Perek, that a Lechi is fine even if you don't see it from within the Mavri, Nira Bifnim, Veshavim Vachutz, the other way around, Nira Machutz, Veshavim Vifnim, we talked about, where the Lechi is not visible as a Lechi from inside the Mavri, only from outside of it. But Pashtus over here, I would imagine it's the same thing, but I don't know.
But the Rechava can be considered outside of the Lechi, so it should be seen from the Rechava itself, shouldn't it?
Maybe, maybe not. I mean, again, the only reason the Lechi is working for the Rechava is on the grounds of Migri, so maybe it needs to be visible from the Rechava in order to be considered like a wall of it. Maybe not. I'm not sure about that point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Shkayach.